And we are the Nonprofits. I'm Dennis Lube, and along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser, we're going to discover that we are in the midst of an angelic flowering of the quantum cycle. Just as we exist in a chaos-driven self-actualization in Austin, Texas, you will enter into an infinite purpose that transcends the inseparability of our understanding on the 19th of November, 2014. But we need a healing direction. Like the atheist community of Austin, a four-dimensional synergistic organization for the rejuvenation of psychic atheism and the non-interconnectedness of church and state. If science tells us anything about the ultra-primordial consciousness of the... See, it can be awakened by their voicemail at 512-220-6561, or by the biofeedback of their website at www.atheist-community.org. The Nonprofits evolves in its ever-expanding matrix live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7 to 8:30 Central Time. Can you hear it? Visitors, look within yourself and know that the essence of nature is potential, just like the nature of chat is found at www.nonprofitsradio.com. Have you found your vision quest? It is time to take wisdom to the next level. It is in summoning the law of attraction that we are energized.
Thank you, Deepak Lube.
Yes, thanks to the new age nonsense generator on the internet.
Oh, nice.
Very nice. You know, you could take the text of that and submit it to one of those web pages that will make you like a fake ransom note.
Uh huh.
That would be concentrated crazy.
Yes, it would.
How's everybody doing?
Yes, it would.
I am good.
Here we are, mid November, roughly. Black Friday coming up.
After some other event that happens.
Right.
The war on Christmas should be gearing up soon, right?
Yeah.
Everybody got your battle
war
gear.
War on Christmas.
I'm making war on Thanksgiving this year.
Oh, okay.
I thought we'd start earlier. And then, you know, in a little while, I'll start making war on Halloween. Because there's been this creep, which we've all noticed, right?
Oh, yeah.
Of the promotion of these holidays starting earlier and earlier and earlier. So mm-hmm. should the attacks on the holidays, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, if we're ever going to defeat them, yes.
I've always thought if we really wanted to make war on Christmas, we should like launch a sneak attack somewhere around March.
Sounds like you're talking about some guy named Warren Christmas.
Everybody have a good couple of weeks?
I did have more than a good couple of weeks. Listened to the entire last rest of the last show that I hadn't listened to until
cool.
now today. And I want to thank Martin Wagner for being such a great Russell.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure to listen to.
Yeah. Yes. It was great having him on the show. Martin is good people.
I launched my new website and a Patreon project.
Oh, yeah?
So, yes.
Okay. So how do people find those things?
The website is www.dennislube.com.
Uh-huh.
And my website is – and the Patreon is www.patreon.com/Dennis Lube.
And that's all run together with no spaces or underscores or
– Right, right.
Stuff like
and
that.
You have a Twitter account.
I have a Twitter account, finally.
Is that
Welcome.
New?
Welcome.
I've joined the Twitterverse, yes.
I've had one since forever, and I don't use it particularly.
Well, I'm the only one who tweets and also reminds people to use hashtag nonprofitsnews if you want to submit news upcoming. And you guys should step it up because it was a bit of a slow news 2 weeks.
I've noticed we do get a certain amount of news submitted in the form of emails
yes.
to the list.
True,
do you farm that for news stories?
No.
No. So if you're listening to this and you have news, don't bother sending it to the list. I won't put – well, I never use things that are, hey, here's a news story emails as listener mail because that's treading into Russell's territory. Russell does news.
That's a problem.
I do listener mail that's just things that they have to say and questions they have to ask as opposed to.
And I don't tread into email because that's Jeff territory.
Well, so but if somebody brings a news story to your attention on the list, though, it's up to you whether you want
to. Well, that's true, but then I'd have to read all the emails.
And I don't tread on anything because I just do the intro.
You only have to read them enough to figure out whether this is a thing telling you about a news story or not.
Yeah,
that's all
I
do. And if they are, then they go into the can.
But I like to go on Twitter on the last minute and just type hashtag nonprofits news,
yes,
and then it's all lined
up
right there.
It's all about labor saving.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my.
Just a bit of advice that when listener mails that are relatively short are more likely to get airplay.
That is true.
It's just that, you know, if you write a long thing, I can try to pare it down to just the relevant bit, but that's work. And if it's a day like today when I didn't even start preparing until like an hour before the show,
right.
That I don't have enough time to do that. So a short one is just kind of automatically win. Oh, it's a short one, and it's talking about something we probably can spend some time on. Yay.
We don't get paid
winner.
For this.
Winner.
Yep.
I do read all of the emails that come in, just so everybody knows.
Good.
They just don't always make it to the show because practical.
Too many.
We want to have a variety of different topics, and rather than
right.
spend the whole show on any one listener mail, and a really long involved one would be like that. It's just, you know, just impractical.
That's right.
All right. So speaking of which,
hey, I've got a thing coming up. Unfortunately, I'm actually going to be out for the show 2 weeks from now again. Because I'm going to be in St. Charles, Missouri, where a Secular Student Alliance has invited me to come talk on skepticism in general. If you are near St. Charles, and I don't actually know where that is because I'm not that familiar with Missouri, but it is December 2nd. That's a Tuesday, and I will be there from 6 o'clock to 8:30 at a lecture hall that you should check with the SCCSSA, St. Charles Community College Secular Student Alliance.
You're going to talk for 2.5 hours?
No, well, I'm going to give like a 45-minute talk, and then people are going to do Q&A, which is going to make it just like the Atheist Experience. So if you happen to know any Christians near the St. Charles, then poke at them, won't you?
Mm. Oh, boy.
So I see. You're gonna take the same path that Matt Dillonty did. He started here and then started jet-setting all over the world.
I'm going to jet-set less than Matt Dillonty, but I'm very pleased to get the opportunity to speak in St. Charles.
Cool.
How do you get on that path? Nobody ever has invited me to talk anywhere.
Is
it my bad breath?
I actually contacted a whole lot of people. Like, I spent a lot of time chasing down Secular Student Alliances and such.
Oh, so you stalked them.
Yes.
And they finally said, we better just bring this guy over. He's going to keep bugging us.
Well, I've also stalked American Atheists, and I might actually be doing a panel with David Silverman on TV production.
Yeah.
So,
very cool.
In Memphis.
I'm just ribbing you, man.
Future.
Good for you.
Okay.
Shall we just start with mail? Let's start with mail.
Start with mail.
Let's.
Just to start with a fun one. A recent episode of the Walking Dead TV show inspired me to ask you guys this question. Imagine, in the midst of a zombie apocalypse, you had the following two alternatives. You can remain in a compound where you are given food, shelter, medical care, comfort, and safety, but you are relentlessly and forcibly required to pray, praise God, confess, attend sermons, and strictly obey all manner of other religious rules and rituals. Alternately, you can leave the compound and risk being killed by zombies, captured by cannibals, starvation, freezing to death, or all the other dangers of the Walking Dead world. Which would you choose? Asks Andrew in Calgary. So it's... It's risk of being eaten by zombies versus putting up with, you know, religious crap 24/7, but being safe.
I'm personally not a huge fan of martyrdom myself, and I don't know how much you've watched The Walking Dead, but that is a particularly nasty zombie universe on an ongoing basis.
Of course, then again,
one of the ways. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dennis.
If religion gets the power it used to have, really won't matter whether you're eaten by zombies or burned at the stake.
I think there's a fundamental error in this in these two choices. So the idea that there is such a place as one in which in the Walking Dead universe where you'll be given food, shelter, medical care, comfort, and safety on a long-term basis.
That's a fair point.
The idea that there is could be such a place, religious or not, I think is silly.
And, of course, that could actually sway the decision both ways. Because on the one hand, you're less safe. On the other hand, it won't really last that long.
Right. And what is it generally that causes the downfall of an apparently safe enclave? It's stupidity on the part of the people or running the place. And what is going to be likely in a place that's run by religious fundamentalists?
To be fair, the downfall is just as often brought on by some bumbling assholes coming in on a well-established system and trying to change shit.
Yeah.
That seems to happen pretty often.
My answer to this conundrum would be hook up with some like-minded non-believers, leave the crappy religious enclave and fend for ourselves. Because I don't think that – I don't think long-term – I would not be able to stop myself from considering leaving the gate open as I left. But but I wouldn't. I wouldn't because that would be wrong. I'm only human.
Yes, but the nice theists, they have all the guns, apparently. So.
I think atheists are practical enough to recognize
guns in the Walking Dead universe are not really way to defend yourself.
That's true.
There's a big downside.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Yeah.
Now we know.
A hypothetical.
Any other comments on that question, guys?
Well, is the Walking Dead universe essentially what happened when Jesus was crucified? Didn't the dead rise from their graves and walk around?
I don't think it mentioned that they ate people.
Yeah.
Well, they don't mention a lot of stuff.
That's right.
Right. Sure. Well, let's do news then.
Okay.
The Risen Dead.
Wow, my tab that I was just about to read just helpfully crashed right before you said.
Fantastic. Shall I do another?
No, it's coming back.
It's there.
Speaking of places being run by religious creeps with no regard for public safety, the Arizona School Board, the Arizona Department of Education, has voted to tear out some pages mentioning abortion from honors biology textbooks. You didn't talk about this last time, did you? I feel like this has been ongoing.
I don't think we did.
wow. Slow scrolling. Okay.
And then it scrolls too far.
Yeah. There were advantages to having that laptop instead. Okay. Despite assurances from the Arizona Department of Education that passages in an honors biology textbook describing abortion are illegal, the governing body of the Gilbert Public Schools voted this week to remove the offending pages, reports Arizona Central. Board member Julie Smith claimed the passages in the textbook, Campbell Biology, Concepts and Connections, violates state law prohibiting the use of materials that do not give preference, encouragement, and support to childbirth and adoption as preferred options to elective abortion. Now, you understand from what I've heard of this of these textbook pages, they do not advocate abortion in any way. They just say
acknowledge its existence and describe
this is a biology book. Here's a medical procedure that people sometimes do, and here's what it's called.
And here's what it does. So, yeah.
Under a heading of contraception can prevent unwanted pregnancy, the test states complete abstinence, avoiding intercourse, is the only totally effective method of birth control. It also describes how the morning after pill works as a contraception method. Smith said the offensive material was brought to her attention by a constituent. So the Gilbert board voted 3-2 to remove the pages. And by remove the pages, they're just basically ripping them out of the books because the books are already printed.
Awesome. This is different from book burning, exactly, Hal.
I mean, you know, it's only burning one page.
Okay. Do you think this is burning? No. It's not book burning, it's page burning.
Do you think this is likely to be a new tactic that we see in the war on knowledge? I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Like the Texas school board could just give – the Texas State Board of Education could just give up on trying to affect what – publishers put in the textbooks
and just
redact the bits they don't like.
They got to try something, man. I have heard – I'm a regular listener to the Rachel Maddow show, and Rachel Maddow has been bringing up this story and said she got hold of an unredacted textbook and has posted scans of the pages of the missing page front and back. And we'll leave it up at a convenient website that has an obvious name like ArizonaHonorsBiology.com or something like that.
Right.
So they've bought this URL, whatever it is, and posted these pages so
excellent.
That students may not miss them.
That's good thinking.
Cool.
Next.
So this is just a local school board, right?
Yes, it's Arizona.
It's not happening
it's
on
not
the state
like
level.
The Texas school board where – yeah, no.
Okay.
Not statewide.
Here's some listener mail that you guys will have to help me remember what this was all about.
Oh?
I think Jeff D. was incorrect on his interpretation of the theme of the story of the prodigal son.
Okay.
Do you guys remember us talking about the story of the prodigal
son?
Yeah,
we did at one point.
Okay. I.e., now here's him characterizing the position that he got from what I said.
Mm-hmm.
God wants people to come crawling back to him.
Oh. Okay.
Said Nick thinks that I was incorrect in thinking that that is a fair characterization of that story.
What I'd like
your thoughts on, however, is this idea that we should not aim to make the Bible sound bad in every passage just for the sake of it. There is plenty there to criticize, so making leaps like the one Jeff D. made sometimes come across as similar to how Christians cherry-pick or misinterpret things that atheists say or believe.
Okay.
So let's talk about the prodigal son for a second.
Yeah, what was that story again?
There's two sons.
Okay.
Right? And one of them does... I probably did get it wrong because I clearly don't remember how the story goes. Anybody here feel like they have a handle on it? Can you look it up on Mr. Internet?
I think the one son leaves the area and then the other son continues working for his dad as a farmer.
Right.
But the prodigal son comes back.
Yeah.
And
then dad's really nice to him.
Dad welcomes him back with open arms and like gives them equal shares of the inheritance or something like that.
And right.
And
the son that stayed thinks that's a ripoff.
Yeah. He's pissed.
Uh-huh.
And this is Jesus telling the story at the time.
You shouldn't be pissed.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, he's like, you know, hey, who are you to complain about other people's gifts when you're getting the same gifts? It doesn't matter what they did before, I think, is what he says in that story.
Okay.
And now you've got my off-the-top-of-my-head
right.
version of the Prodigal Son story.
Which might also be incorrect.
What were you saying about it?
I don't remember. I don't even remember the discussion.
Well, that's great.
Let's talk about what he wants to talk about is this idea, apparently, the idea that Nick has, that we should not try to make the Bible sound bad all the time just for the heck of it.
We don't have to try.
Yeah.
It does sound bad. Bible has terrible morals in general.
I should have it. Like I said, I didn't have as much time to prepare this morning as this evening as I should have. And what I'd like to have done is gone back and listened to that segment. So it's hard for me to comment in any detail on what happened there.
Right.
But I generally don't comment on things unless there's the details right there in front of me. So my guess is somebody looked it up on the internet or had a Bible with them or something, and we got a relatively accurate description of it, and then my interpretation was what Nick said.
Yeah, here, I have the Wikipedia, and here are just a couple other minor details.
Okay,
before the son left, he got a bunch of money from the dad and then blew it all on extravagant living, air quotes.
Okay, that's very different.
Then he left, came back, and then after the other son complained, which I pretty much got right. The father says, "But it was appropriate to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Went off,
and
had his well time,
Wikipedia
and came back.
Goes on to say that the parable is about loss and redemption, which Christians really dig. I don't see anything wrong with characterizing that as praising people for coming crawling back.
Yeah. I suppose I could, on the other hand, say that what it represents is, you know, it's a parable doing an analogy of God, in which God does not give any does not have any gratitude whatsoever for the people that do bow and scrape to him, the ones that stay on the farm, right?
Right.
Yeah,
and do as they're told, get nothing. They don't get any special celebration.
Well, they still get to go to heaven or whatever.
but I think
they get,
you know what?
Just as much heaven.
As here's the issue I have with Nick's suggestion that we shouldn't go out of our way to find bad things about the Bible. To me, the entire advantage of being an atheist is not having barriers put up to about what I can think about and what interpretations I can make.
Right.
And, you know, so these stories lose all they're not special, deserving of special treatment anymore when I'm an atheist.
Right.
So I don't treat them special.
Well, I mean,
we look at them at face value.
Every once in a while, I mention the Star Trek rule, which is a person who obsessively quotes the Bible is just like a person who keeps quoting Star Trek and expects you to assume that it's brilliant wisdom just because it's in Star Trek. You know, they're nothing more than fanboys, and the content doesn't necessarily warrant it.
And, you know, the Bible is chock full of pre-medieval bullcrap. Views about how people can or should behave, and behave toward one another that are savage and primitive and terrible.
Yeah.
And, this may or may not be one of them, but if we don't allow ourselves the freedom to look at these things critically, then we'll never know. So I can't agree with the general premise of we shouldn't be looking for things wrong with it. Because that's the same as saying we need to treat it with kid gloves, and which I just think is fundamentally not correct.
Here's a point I'd like to make. I'd like to freshly make about the prodigal son story. Now that our critical attention is on it, there's more I don't like about that story.
Mm-hmm.
Christians, when it comes to morals, really want to have their cake and eat it too.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You know, when, you know, one of the big arguments that they throw out there for Christianity is, hey, you have to believe in God because God provides the only, you know, God is the only true arbiter of morality. And without that, we're all Hitler, right?
Right.
But when you take a closer look at what the Bible teaches about Christianity, especially in the Protestant interpretation, it's pretty much, it doesn't matter one bit how you actually behave. You can be the good son and stay home and work the land, or you can be the prodigal son and go out and blow all your money on hookers and blow.
Right.
As long as you come crawling back to God, like Jeff said, apparently,
and we've seen,
everything's fine.
And we've seen this attitude enshrined in chick tracts, right?
Yes.
Where,
oh, yeah.
On the one hand, there's there's the rapist who in his last 5 seconds of his life converts to Christianity and he gets to go to heaven. And then there's the victim, you know, dying in a cardboard box in an alley, and because they never became a Christian, they go to hell.
Yep.
Right.
So, let me go.
I tend not to cut the Bible stories any slack because the whole thing's a freaking protection racket. So it's like, where do you go from there?
Let me go on with Nick's letter a little bit. I think part of my perspective comes from being a Christian previously and therefore knowing how I used to view these passages. I think it is appropriate to give many Christians credit for being uncomfortable with some of the moral things in the Bible. However, if non-believers say things in a way that appears as a leap to everything the Bible says is bad, they are happy to simply write you off. Well, yeah, but, you know, in our experience, Christians are happy to write us off no matter what we say.
Right.
That is not in agreement with their assumptions. So this is... This is just another one of these accommodationist views. No, I am not gonna temper my language to try to find some magical formula where I can then tell Christians what I think is wrong with Christianity and expect them to give me a positive response.
Right. I mean, right off the bat, our existence suggests to the Christian that, oh, someone thinks I'm deluded.
Right.
How do you get past that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, frankly, it seems to me one of the best best demonstrations you can make to a Christian that maybe their religion is full of shit is bluntly criticize their stupid holy book and beliefs and stuff and not be hit by a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
the very fact of being able to say these things and, with a straight face and with seriousness and not have some magical doom fall upon you.
Right, not being struck down by a self-identified jealous god.
Is itself evidence that they're wrong. So I've long ago given up trying to find some common ground. There isn't common ground as far as I'm concerned. They believe a bunch of crap, and I'm going to say what I think about it.
Yep.
Matt
Dillahunty, of course, wrote this long diatribe against the Sermon on the Mount, which you can find at ironchariots.org, where the Sermon on the Mount is presumed to be one of the nicest and wisest things
most poetic
Jesus ever said. And it's really not that good.
Yeah. This was the longest letter that I brought to the show today.
Okay.
He deserves some attention. Nick goes on, of course, you discussed this on an atheist-only show, so it doesn't matter, really. You may not have been completely serious anyway. Well, there's a difference between serious in the sense of we're certain that that is exactly what those passages imply, and serious in the sense of we think it's worth considering whether that is the implication of the passages.
Yes, and there are some passages that I'm pretty sure, you know, we could find some passages in the Bible that we'd say, okay, yeah, this is pretty solid. This is pretty good. The problem is that passage doesn't excuse all the other crap that's in there.
Yeah. Also, you are under no obligation to care what Christians think. Well, thank you for that. My only thought is that I wish, looking back, I had other perspectives, such as the atheist perspective, presented in a way that would not cause me to shut off straight away. Logic and reason do really work, and there is plenty in the Bible to question while sounding genuinely curious. Okay, genuinely. You know what? I am not curious about, like, whether the Bible's really onto something.
Yeah, not really.
Sounding genuinely curious when you're not is called, you know, giving a false impression. So, there is a question of personal responsibility and basic human decency and dignity here. Is it appropriate to demean yourself by pretending that you're interested, right?
Right, that you're prepared to engage.
In order to hope that, again, what you say is going to get through to the Christians and change their minds. Now, Nick does not tell us specifically how he eventually got out of Christianity. Maybe it was something like that. If so, great. I'm actually a fan of all different
approaches. Absolutely.
I certainly don't think that everybody should take exactly the same angle that I do, or that Russell does, or that Dennis does. But I think all those angles are perfectly appropriate as long as they are honest and sincere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally have a problem with the idea of pretending to some attitude I don't actually have for the sake of maybe
manipulating the other person
for the sake of yeah maybe tricking the tricking maybe reaching the that Christian on some level where they can accept what I'm saying
right.
When I don't believe any such level exists. I just don't.
Yeah.
Okay. For instance, the issue of Jesus coming back within a generation, slavery, homosexuality, and for me especially, hell, these all made me uncomfortable and put seeds of doubt in my mind. Ultimately, I tried to find explanations. They rarely made sense, and slowly I realized that maybe there was no God at all. Okay, he does say how he...
Yeah.
Converted. Well, that's great. That's how I did it too. That's how I did it too, right? But there's not a lot that people outside of that. I mean, I went through the same process, right? I pretty much got myself out of it. It was not because some atheist sat down with me pretending to be interested in the Bible and directing my attention to those things. I just don't, in my experience, that wasn't what it took, and I don't see how that would work. All you're going to do is you're going to set off alarms in the Christian's brain, and he's going to think, "Aha! Now I can't trust anything that person says because they're trying to
twist the scripture."
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, great. Thanks very much, Nick from Australia. He says, "I'm American though, so my accent is just American, but." I now say tomato incorrectly, etc. How do they say tomato? Is that tomato in Australia?
Tomato?
Tomato.
Tomato.
I don't know.
Tomato. Now look what you've done. You've made us go all off on Australian accents.
Go all Aussie on us. Here,
thanks. Yes. Thanks for your letter, Nick. We're glad that you're out of religion. You don't expect to find a lot of sympathy on this show for an accommodationist view response to Christianity, or maybe more fairly to you, willingness to offer anything other than the opinions that we actually feel.
Yeah. Now, right. we will always defend the right of people to hold those stupid, ridiculous, unjustified yes. beliefs. But that is a different thing.
And also to pursue what any tilt at whatever windmills of strategies they right. think might be effective in getting through to Christians, by all means.
Mm-hmm. Please, if anybody finds the magic bullet, let us know.
Yeah. Okay. News.
So I mentioned the war on Christmas, uh-huh. or the war on Thanksgiving, and
yes,
I think it's time for some good old holiday schadenfreude, because Kirk Cameron is ready for the war on Christmas with a movie called Saving Christmas. And I have here
Private Christmas.
Yeah. I have here a review of Saving Christmas from the AV Club, sister publication to The Onion. And I have to say, every time I read a snarky review, I'm reminded how sad I am that the master, Roger Ebert, is no longer with us. But still, I enjoy the AV Club's reviews, and I'm not going to read this whole thing. You should check it out. But
So this movie actually exists.
This movie does exist.
Oh,
it's,
my God.
It's the proud holder now of a D- from the AV Club. The title is Saving Christmas is the Solemn Duty of This Inept Kirk Cameron Vehicle.
Awesome.
Saving Christmas places Kirk Cameron, who used to be on the sitcom Growing Pains, on the front. just have to remind you that
yes.
he once did something people paid attention to for right. a while. On the front lines of the war on Christmas, fighting gallantly on the side of Christmas. This movie puts so much stock in Cameron's star power, in fact, that it begins with him directly addressing the camera.
Ooh, always a good sign.
In a monologue nonsensically placed between production company logos, drinking, quote, hot chocolate out of a seemingly empty mug, as he sets the scene with the vague language of a coded sermon. There's lots of talk about how they think that, and we know this, and how all of us sense that there's something special about the Christmas season.
Wow.
But back to that hot chocolate. Existent or not, Cameron makes it clear that it's no mere warm beverage, but rather an absolutely crucial component to the holiday season, along with other frequently mentioned objects such as gigantic glistening hams and swaddling cloth of baby Jesus. These emblems matter because Saving Christmas doesn't take direct aim at non-believers, different religions, or the dreaded secular humanists. Instead, it creates a whole new straw man in the form of Christian... that's a name. Cameron's grumpy brother-in-law. Christian is the only named character, which implies Cameron is playing himself, a suspicion driven home by the fact that Christian's wife is played by Cameron's real-life sister, Bridget. Anyway, apparently, from having read this review once, it seems to be really important that Kirk Cameron personally emphasize with his many monologues in the movie that all those things we think of as the secular trappings of Christmas are really, all part of the beautiful religious message now. So don't, pay no attention to those people who are telling you it's pagan.
Okay. But
yes?
How are the special effects?
Yeah. I'm glad this thing doesn't have a bias.
Are there any explosions? These are things we need to know.
Okay.
No flying reindeer, I take it,
In real time.
Obviously, the first thing the reviewer mentions is the obvious absence of any hot chocolate from his mug of hot cocoa, which, I don't know if you could do that digitally these days.
Could
they have generated some digital hot cocoa?
Yeah.
a little whipped cream mustache on him and stuff with CG. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, but they didn't do that.
It takes budget.
Well, that's sadly, that's what a lot of these Christian movies do not have.
Well, this sounds
which doesn't
like
make them
an
bad.
Awesome
There's good.
Movie.
There are some great movies that have low budgets.
Oh, yeah.
That is
this,
true.
This is apparently not one of them.
No.
Okay.
In real time, I'm receiving an update from a listener in Australia, my friend Emma, who says...
Isn't the internet wonderful?
Tomato is how this Aussie says
tomato.
It.
Tomato.
Tomato.
Okay,
so,
great.
Thanks, Emma.
All right. Let's just go to this one. On the subject of gay marriage and poly marriage. Is this Nick in Australia again? Wait a minute. Is this the same?
Uh-oh.
This is either the same or a different Nick in Australia.
Multi-marriage.
We're giving him too much airtime.
I didn't realize that that I had two letters from Nick's in Australia, so I didn't look at the email addresses when I copied these down. So
subject
I'm not sure.
Of hypermarriage.
Possibly. I think a key difference between gay marriage and polygamous marriage is that everyone would have the same right to marriage one person to another if gay marriage is legal. So there is equality versus extension of marriage rights in the case of polygamous marriage. See what he's saying is
not following that.
Is heterosexual couples can get married.
Right.
Each person can marry one person.
Okay.
Right. So you extend that to gay people. It's still each person is able to marry
one
person. One
other person, sure.
But if you allowed polygamous marriage, you would have to actually extend the definition of what marriage meant or what the rights regarding marriage were because each person would now be able to marry multiple people.
Okay.
I don't give a fuck.
Well, so you change the traditional marriage, one man and one woman, to one person and one person. Where's the harm in going, okay, one person to several or several to several or whatever? I mean,
I think he is onto a technically accurate point.
But who gives a fuck?
But, then I guess my next question would be, why is it just one? I mean, are you limited to owning one automobile? Are limited to one automobile license, but then you can have as many cars as you want.
Let's not cast partners in marriage as inanimate objects.
You can adopt more than one child.
You can adopt more than one child. Thank you. That's a better analogy.
It is better.
Yeah.
I'm scratching my head trying to think of any law that allows you to have something.
But
right?
only one.
But only one. Ever.
Well, like, for instance, for tax purposes, you can own as many houses as you want, but only one of them can be considered your primary residence that gives you, some kind of tax breaks. And since I am a strong advocate of the idea that marriage is first and foremost a legal arrangement, seriously, the... let's not redefine marriage is exactly what people say about gay marriage. They say, well, marriage is defined as one man, one woman, and gays are free to marry somebody of the opposite sex as much as they want.
Right.
Yeah. It's arguably not correct, Nick, that that allowing gay people to marry would not be an extension of marriage rights because it's extending the rules from one man, one woman to one person, one more person. So these limitations are semi-arbitrary.
Yeah.
And it's hard to see why any of these limitations need to exist in for some practical purpose. Okay.
Right. I'll repeat my usual argument that the reason one of the biggest reasons polygamy hasn't been implemented yet is because contracts between a bunch of people especially involving kids, are complicated. Yeah, but that doesn't really mean that they shouldn't.
Right. It's not impossible.
All right. End news.
Yeah. There's more on gay marriage this week. In fact, our old buddy the Pope.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
I understand. Super Pope made an appearance last time.
Yes, he did. It was, I missed him. It was awesome.
Regrettably. The Pope, who everybody loves to say is just changing the way the church operates and keeps saying nice things about atheists and gays, made it to Pink News this week. That is Europe's largest gay news service, according to them.
Mm-hmm. Has he come out of the closet?
Yes, he has, and it's a revolutionary. No, actually, he was...
He came out of the closet, and we discovered that he was in there picking his nose.
And eating it. Yeah. No, he came out of the closet and revealed that he's a homophobe just like the rest of them. The Pope has declared that marriage between a man and a woman is in crisis during a speech to an interfaith conference on traditional marriage.
How? In what possible way?
The Catholic leader today opened the Complementary of Man and Woman conference. That's good terrible phrasing. Grief. Which brings together religious leaders from across different faiths who oppose same-sex marriage. Bizarrely, he did not explicitly reference same-sex marriage by name in his speech, but instead referred to ominous threats facing the marriage of man and woman and warned that a degradation of morals was causing devastation.
Do you have the other news story from the last 2 weeks where he demoted some guy?
As a matter of fact, I do. Do you want that one?
Well, I just want to reference it right now because okay. In addition to this, there were all these idiots coming out of the woodwork once again. Oh, this Pope is so wonderful and he's such a breath of fresh air because he demoted this guy who was a very outspoken anti-gay Catholic. I forget what he was, a cardinal.
Is the cardinal who, during the John Kerry election, said that Catholics should refuse to give John Kerry communion. Remember that?
I don't remember that.
Oh, okay, that guy.
So it took me all of 5 seconds to look at the news story and notice that this guy that got demoted was an outspoken critic of Pope Francis.
Mm-hmm. Wah.
But clearly he was demoted because he was anti-gay and not because he was a critic of this Pope. Clearly, right?
Clearly.
Because that is the only thing that fits the spin.
The narrative.
Obviously, the Pope was just bringing up this devastation on traditional marriage after the fact to cover it up.
So
that's what it is.
So, you know, now we can dispense with this notion that this Pope is okay with gay rights.
Right. He's just
because he's not
demoting his political opposition.
And all that's left is the other explanation. He demoted that guy because that guy was critical of him.
Yeah, listen, I love historic fiction about the church, and the history of the church is full of political backstabbing. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. There was some other – oh, the other news story. It was notable on Facebook, right? The news story about he demoted the vehemently anti-gay cardinal. Mm-hmm. Is all full of people going, I love this Pope, he's so awesome. And this news story and the other one that came out in the last couple of weeks where he said some quite judgmental and cruel things about the young lady that took her own life because of her brain cancer. Right?
Yes.
That, not a peep out of those people. Certainly none of them going, oh –
that wasn't very nice.
Yeah. I mean, there was nobody commenting on those at all except for, you know, people who have already seen through this idiot. Ugh. But, you know,
Keep it up, Francis. Eventually people will catch on.
Well, yeah.
I think that
his manipulations are working. So
his Francis Fox News
PR guy, yes.
His Fox News PR advisor must be pulling his hair out.
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's time for a mail.
Oh, okay. Wow. this is for you, Russell.
Oh.
I heard you on the Atheist Experience one day. This is Daniel. He didn't say where he was from. I heard you on the Atheist Experience one day talking about having to teach your child how to think and not what to think. I'm getting to that point with my son, and I was wondering if you could give any tips on that front. Also, if you could point to any good materials on the subject, just because I don't want to indoctrinate him into my godlessness, even though I'm hopeful he will follow, and I'm pretty sure he will.
Actually, I did see this message, and and as a result of that, I took my standard reply for raising kids and turned it into a collection of links, which you can now read at the atheistexperience.blog, which is freethoughtblogs.com/axp. And it was one of the most recent posts. So today being middle of November 2014, if you're listening to this show later, just hunt that down or go to the Atheist Experience blog and look up the tag Raising Atheists. But I guess I will briefly go over again the fact that when I was bringing up Ben, I didn't really want to indoctrinate him into atheism and say, right, it's going to be my way or else. But nor did I want to take this wishy-washy stance that I've heard way too many atheist parents take, which is to just say, okay, well, we're going to avoid all conversation of religion because, you know, I have to wait until he's old enough to, to make his own choices. And of course, you know, old enough to make your own choices is like, you know, 10, 12, having some level of sentience.
Yeah,
and by the time they get there, they're already going to have been proselytized by all their little school friends who want to bring them along to the church services where the kids get cookies and get told cute stories about fluffy animals and shit like that.
Right.
And, you know, I've heard a ton of parents who had resolved to not bring up the subject of religion with their kids and were shocked every single time.
Shocked,
when their kids come home and are like, "Mommy, Mommy, I heard about this, you know, Jesus saving everybody today." And they're like, "Oh, now what do I do?"
Right.
You
didn't set the groundwork here.
Right. And because of that, preemptively, as Ben got old enough, I mean, you know, we're talking 4 or 5, got old enough to grasp the difference between real and pretend stuff, I started playing little games with him where I would, you know, ask him whether Superman is real or pretend, dinosaurs are real or pretend. And
the funniest one he ever got wrong?
I think he did not believe that kings were real.
Oh!
Okay.
That's nice. Actually that's kind of... remember.
That's interesting.
That's a really interesting view for him to have had.
Yeah,
That's not funny, but I like it.
Yeah. You're setting up the seeds of critical thinking.
Right, exactly.
Sure, getting it on the table that, you know, there's some things people talk about that aren't actually true.
Right.
That's a fundamentally important understanding to have about the world.
Yeah. As soon as you've got that,
you can start wondering on a case-by-case basis which one is which,
right,
which is the important thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, parents read fictional stories to their kids all the time. Mm-hmm. I think the first long book I ever read him was Charlotte's Web, and somewhere in
that's
there,
a good one.
Yeah, I started reading him the Bible. Not too much of it because it's super boring. but I told him some Bible stories, and then eventually I told him, you know, some people really believe that's true. I don't, but you're allowed to think differently than me. But here's why I don't.
Right.
Other things that I'm going to be covering in that post that I mentioned include the fact that if you've got religious friends or relatives, they're going to try to challenge your authority as a parent, and you know, some suggestions on how to deal with that. And I've also got some links to some shows that I've done with Dale McGowan, who wrote a book called Parenting Beyond Belief. And I haven't read that one personally, but I like Dale, and I'm pretty sure his book's good.
Right.
What do you think of Dan Barker's, what is it, Maybe Yes, Maybe No, Maybe Right, Maybe Wrong?
Love him.
There's two books. Is it Right and Wrong and Yes and No?
There's three Dan Barker books I had in Ben's bookshelf, and he just picked him up one day when he was starting to read stuff. And he read through them. There's one called Just Pretend, which is about atheism. And then there's two books that are similar. One is called Maybe Yes, Maybe No, which is about skepticism. And one is Maybe Right, Maybe Wrong, which is about secular morality. And right. I think Dan Barker does a pretty bang-up job of explaining it on a kid's level.
Excellent.
All right. News? Or is it time for something else? It's after 8.
Is it? How about that? I guess it must be time for shit internet apologists say. Thanks for the reminder.
You're welcome. What do we got today?
Well, we've got Sean Roberts of Charisma Magazine, who is very concerned about the title of this article, which is The Deadly Deception of Sexual Atheism in the Church.
Wait, what? Wait, hold it. Is he the author of the article?
Yeah.
The way you said that, it sounds like he's concerned about his own headline. He's concerned about the subject that's in his headline.
Excuse me. The photo credit is Sean Roberts. Okay. It's two people hugging, and the woman has evil-looking eyes. The actual article is written by a guy named Kenny Luck.
Kenny Luck. L-U-C-K. Okay. Luck.
Yep.
Wow.
Now, Kenny says he starts with an anecdote.
Is that like Good Luck Jonathan, who's the president of some...
Bad Luck Brian, who's a meme. His anecdote is, the guy sitting across from me is a professing and practicing Christian. He drops by my office unannounced today to talk to me about his new online dating life. Specifically, he wants to talk about the overwillingness of Christian women he has encountered on several of his dates, who want to jump right from a very public conversation and a vanilla latte at Starbucks to very private whispers and physical exchanges between the sheets back at his place.
Well,
to be fair, that is a problem I think a lot of atheist dudes wish they had.
Yeah.
Usually this gender scenario is reversed, but the sex, love, and dating landscape continues to move in a progressively liberal direction among Christians. Whoa. Without any solid indicators that it will change anytime soon. Both genders today, across all ages and all Christian demographics, are prone to compartmentalize their faith away from their sexual life.
Newsflash.
Yeah.
It's always been that way, dude.
Unlike they used to, right?
Yeah. If the Victorian era taught us anything.
Yep.
I was in bed and we were having sex, and I got so excited I just completely forgot that I believed in an invisible man in the sky that was going to torture me forever if I didn't do what he said.
And who was watching?
Yes. Who's watching everything I do? Oh, my God.
Yep. While Christian singles report that praying and church attendance are highly desirable qualities in the dating matrix, a troubling and confusing dichotomy arises when the issue of sex before marriage presents itself.
Hubba hubba.
Specifically, single Christians encounter a sexual fog that...
The fog of war?
Oh, yes. Oh, my, yes. The sexual fog. I have a sexual fog machine in my house.
I'm envisioning Stephen King, The Mist.
Yeah.
Except instead of monsters coming out of the mist.
I turn it on when my friends come over and it's just delightful. You don't know. You don't know who anyone is or what their parts are, and you just ravenously have your sexual encounters with whatever warm bodies you encounter in the fog.
Now, he didn't misunderstand that. It's not sexual frog or anything.
No, I don't believe so.
A sexual fog. What is a sexual fog?
At the end of the Christian horror movie, Sexual Fog, I think there's one more holdout, and then he realizes he's not going to get away, so he turns to his companion and they do the deed, and then all of a sudden the fog clears up and the military comes to save them, and he's like, no, what have I done?
You can read my review of The Sexual Fog on my website.
That fog clouds and hides the reality that an identity rooted in Christ should manifest itself in intelligent and hope-filled sexual restraint based on God's promises, and instead replaces it with fear and pride-filled choices based on some other promise they believe more. In a recent...
That is so brain-warping.
There's so much wrong with that. How do we unpack it?
Well, that other promise is actually demonstrably true, I think. I guess he's vague enough that I don't know. Mm-hmm. Do you want, by all means, unpack away
no,
if you've got
go
something
ahead.
To say.
Wait, yes, I want to. Please say that sentence again. Slowly.
Okay. Oh, this is long.
Okay.
Slowly.
That fog clouds. That fog clouds
yeah.
and hides the reality that an identity rooted in Christ.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Go on.
Should manifest itself in intelligent and hope-filled sexual restraint.
Uh huh.
Yeah. More. Faster. Come on.
Based on God's promises. And instead replaces it with fear and pride-filled choices.
And also orgasms. That's I think
oh
that,
God, oh
that's,
God.
That's
fearful
where...
Fearful orgasms.
Yeah, oh,
fearful
it's terrifying.
Orgasms.
It's terrifying. Sometimes in that fog, there's so much going on, I just can't... I lose control. I completely lose control. I don't know what I'm doing. It's terrifying. But it eminently satisfying, I have to say. It's terrible. We shouldn't do it.
Yes,
we shouldn't do it, and that's why we're getting
Mormon
getting together again next week yeah. to discuss how much we shouldn't have done it.
And pride-filled choices based on some other promise they believe more. Holy shit, that sentence was terrible.
Yes. Yes.
Right. You're supposed to remember that Jesus is going to give you something better than sex.
After mm-hmm. you're dead.
And so instead of having sex, you should, like, not.
Right.
That's what that – that's the entire – that is the entire – this that wasn't so much an unpacking as just a distilling,
parsing.
Crystallizing the point of that run-on sentence.
In it was all more your, of a diagramming, really.
Yes. In all your dating, just remember, leave room for Jesus.
Yes. In a recent study conducted by ChristianMingle.com, Christian singles between the ages of 18 to 59 were asked, would you have sex before marriage? The response? 63% of the single Christians responded yes.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
They didn't extend that survey to Christians over the age of 59, but if they had, I can tell you what I would have said.
I guess people should be stockpiling stones. I mean,
mm-hmm. In my 30 years of adult and youth ministry experience, this is as unfiltered, direct, and honest as a question and answer can be.
Yeah?
It is equally honest to say that nearly 9 out of 10 self-proclaimed single Christians are in practice sexual atheists. So
sexual atheists.
That was the title of the piece.
So that's what he means. I just thought the title was just a garbled nonsense. He means
right,
a thing
no,
by that.
If you
he means if you have sex and if your sex life does not revolve around your religious beliefs,
the ceremony,
then you're sexually an atheist.
I'll take
because you don't. You're not acting like you believe God is there.
Yeah. No. Sorry. Thank you for the sales pitch, sir.
Wow.
But I long ago decided that I had no sexual interest in Christians, and this nonsense about, well, as long as we're having our sex without thinking about Jesus, we're atheists at that time. That's not good enough.
I mean,
that's not good enough for me. You're going to have to do better.
He's making my argument for me.
Yeah, what's your argument?
One of my arguments, if Christians admit that they sin,
yeah,
and if they sin, and God is omnipresent, that means they're sinning right in God's face.
Uh-huh.
And you don't
or
do
sometimes
that. You don't commit crimes right in front of
or
a policeman.
Or sometimes in front of his other orifices.
Yes, but you don't commit crimes in front of a policeman.
Right.
But apparently it's okay to commit crimes right in front of God. Yeah. I think the difference is they don't really believe in God, and that this guy is actually backing that up.
So you're promoting meta-atheism, basically.
Yeah, something like that.
I think
it
would have been more accurate to say that they're sexual pagans.
sexual pagans.
They would believe... In those circumstances, it's more exciting to think of God as, you know, someone who has a very extensive Polaroid collection.
Well, sexual pagan brings in the whole bonfire and dancing around naked thing, but still.
Well, that can be one source of the man of the sexual fog.
And it makes the fog, yes.
Yes.
It's like a sexual smoke. What do they call that? That the Indians
yes.
have.
And no matter which side of the fire you're on, that sexual fog just keeps following you.
Although
lodge is what I'm trying to say. It's a sexual.
Sweat lodge.
It's a sexual. We're sexual Navajos or whatever type of American Indians have the sweat lodge.
I mean, I'd like to make this point that, you know, again, this is not like a brand new trend. It's just that the availability of the internet and sites that like Christian Mingle that are able to super efficiently collect data on quick spur of the moment polls, just making it more visible.
Yeah, you can shine a big light on it.
And do you think maybe it's also new that we have idiots like this now willing to say this kind of crap on internet?
Apparently.
You don't think that's new?
No. I mean, there's that favorite quote of mine from, like, so, you know, Aristotle or somebody who said the youth today are terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Sure. And there's examples. Like, you can find creepy old 1950s, like, etiquette books and things and say quite
hang
insane,
on there, Timmy.
Quite insane things about how people ought to behave.
That's right. Don't be a Mr. Bungle.
I think we had Mr. Bungle over the other night. I'll just say he was very experienced.
Yeah, in fact, I'm pretty sure that I saw exactly one of those things that was like, you know, a collection of sexual advice for young people. And,
yeah.
And one of them, like it popped up on Facebook or something, and one of them was something like advising women that even though no woman actually enjoys sex, it's the price of marital stability or something like that.
Wow.
Great advice.
Yeah.
It is terrible, but what you want to do is you want to make the biggest investment you can in paying that price as often as possible.
Yes, that's where the fog comes in.
Your suffering brings you closer to Jesus.
Who let the well-behaved Mormon woman in here?
I don't know.
I think if you just say sex while looking in a mirror, she will appear.
Yeah. But she's nailing it. Oh!
You have to say it three times in a mirror. and then look out for that fog.
Yeah. So I'm skipping ahead.
Fog.
Jesus himself said it would trend this way. The Apostle Paul...
They're always saying Jesus predicted this crap.
Yeah.
Where is the bit in the Bible? Oh, I guess, he says vague things about giving people giving themselves over to lust and so on.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
so
he
predicted some guy on the internet would write this article.
The Apostle Paul, of course, forewarned the very single, very godly Timothy that there would be times in his ministry when clear and sound doctrine in Scripture would be defeated by broken culture teaming up with the ever-present and self-serving nature within every Christian, he accurately forecasted a self-styled Christianity that reflected culture over the character of Christ in personal moral spaces and practice.
Like it takes a rocket scientist to figure that out.
Yeah, Aristotle. People have been saying this kind of crap since forever. That does not make it a prediction. And also, it doesn't make it an actual wrong thing.
Right.
You know,
that's an assumption.
That people are able to enjoy themselves, you know, to exercise their sexual impulses as long as they do it, you know.
In a fog.
Responsibly.
Right.
with or without a fog is not actually a bad thing.
Right.
So this is an entire rant. Entire rant against a non-problem.
Yeah, as I recall, St. Paul was no fan of sex inside marriage either. He just said, he said, you know, if you have to have sex, you better get married. It's better to get married than to burn. But, you know, it would be better if you just don't.
Wow. Is it over?
No,
oh, no, good grief.
I'll cruise forward.
He goes on.
Oh, man.
He goes on for quite a while.
These guys, they tend to do that.
They like to hear themselves.
The love, sex, and dating forecast among adult single believers for the foreseeable future is this: cloudy with a chance of fear and pride.
I believe foggy is the word he's looking for.
Yes, indeed. Practical sexual atheism among Christians says God can speak into some things, but not sex. What?
Sexual atheism.
What? What did he just say?
He's saying he's saying atheists of some kind acknowledge God's existence, but just say he is not active in certain areas, which is a complete misunderstanding of the word atheism, which he wants to invoke.
Well, he's talking about sexual atheists, by which he means every Christian who has sex before marriage.
Right, right. Uh-huh. They claim to believe in God, but they don't
No,
act
he
like
shouldn't
it.
Call them any kind of atheists, because he's got them believing in a God.
Yeah.
Right, except in the sense that Dennis mentioned, which is that if they really believed that, they'd be a little more cautious.
Right, they'd be more circumspect in their sexual fog.
This ultimate expression of self-deception and loss of mind goes all the way back to the garden.
Oh, my. I have to say, the point at which you completely lose your mind is... That's a wonderful place to be.
All the way back to the garden.
Adam and Eve took the bait, and apparently so are the majority of single Christians in the garden of love, sex, and dating. They're listening to the voice that says, "Eat and have your eyes opened." Man. That didn't say man.
Don't eat and leave your eyes closed. What the hell?
So what's next? I mean, he's gonna have like sexual gourmands, people who go ahead and enjoy nice, fancy, you know, exotic meals without thinking about Jesus, and those will be atheist gourmands, not sexual gourmands, atheist gourmands.
Gourmands, yes.
Right. Atheist, I don't know, sports
fans.
Do the
seven deadly sins.
Atheist,
you know?
Sports fans who go and enjoy watching their favorite sports teams and don't think about God while they're doing it. Atheist, skydivers.
Right.
You could just – you could really extend this concept of his to anything that people enjoy.
Yeah. That
atheist coin collecting.
Atheist coin collectors who are just interested in getting that next, you know, rare, you know, double die dime.
Right.
And they don't care what Jesus thinks about it.
Right. Well, I mean, this is interesting because on the last show, I remember Martin talking about the phrase "Christians aren't perfect, just forgiven," where he was emphasizing the fact that Christians – go ahead and happily admit that they're sinning all the time, but
right.
but they're covered in the forgiveness of Jesus and whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
But
this guy seems to be
like this, yeah.
he seems to be completely rejecting that and
yeah,
saying why no, you shouldn't do it at all.
Any sin on your part means you're an atheist.
Yeah.
You don't really believe.
Which is great because you put this guy in a room with Ray Comfort and you pretty soon realize that Ray Comfort is flat out saying, I don't believe in God, according to this guy.
Right.
To realize.
Wait, why?
Well, because Ray Comfort, if you ask him, have you yeah. ever done so and so wrong?
Yeah.
He'll say, oh, yes, you know, I've sinned. According to this guy.
According to this guy? Ray Comfort doesn't believe in God.
Ray Comfort was some flavor of atheist while he was yeah. doing that, is what this guy's saying.
Mm-hmm. Right. Although he said something like, you know, I remember in our conversation that I had with him, he said uh-huh. something like, you know, no, I haven't looked lustfully at a woman since I became a Christian or
yeah,
something
but
like
this,
that.
This guy is actually proposing temporary atheism.
Is he?
Atheism
like
on a case-by-case atheism on a case-by-case basis.
Your Honor, I plead not guilty on the account of temporary atheism.
Yes. We had sex last night. No, I was an atheist then. I'm back to being Christian.
Yeah, the Christian
now.
Me is still a virgin.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm waiting for that. Yeah.
Well, that would account for like the split brain patients where half their brain is an atheist and half their brain isn't an atheist.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, ay, ay, ay. Well, this is crazy, crazy making stuff.
All right, almost to the end.
All right.
They, along with us, will have that moment in front of the living Christ, and we want that moment to be the best it can possibly be. To realize such an epic and eternal moment, we not only have to pray for them, but we also have to equip them practically with the best possible teachings and tools that serve to restore a version of God that transforms them in their context.
Right, because it wouldn't be possible.
Talking about saving these people?
It would not be possible to really savor your meeting with our Lord and God, Jesus Christ, if you've ever committed a sexual act outside of wedlock.
Yeah.
Because you'd be sitting there thinking,
right.
This is just not as good as that one time when when those two gentlemen. Well, I didn't need to go into detail.
You get to the gate and you go, I just know he's going to play that video.
Anyway, in case you wanted a bio, Kenny Luck is the founder of Every Man Ministries, men's pastor at
wow.
Saddleback Church. Isn't that here in Texas?
Sounds Texas-y.
And he's a ChristianMingle.com advisory board member.
Well, okay.
And he's just pissed off at the poll result they got.
Yep.
Wow.
Though I'll give him, you know, kudos for acknowledging that they got the results that they got. Because
right.
a lot of times you'll see sites putting up those polls. they go drastically in a direction you know they didn't
right.
want.
Their polls go all pear shaped,
and then they just delete those polls
yes.
and don't talk about it anymore.
Yep.
That's what usually happens.
We'll never speak of this again.
Are we done with?
We're done with that.
Shit,
moving on.
Well, I have some listener mail left, but they're both kind of long. You want to talk about?
Go ahead. I'm not.
You want to talk about the Satan Monument or transhumanism? Votes.
I always like
Satan.
Oh, you like transhumanism. I like transhumanism, so we're split.
I have in the past tried to just get off the transhumanism subject because it's like to me, it's spending a lot of time on transhumanism on this show is like spending a lot of time on, I don't know, biochemistry or something.
Yeah.
It's a thing that certainly you can think more clearly about without religion, but I don't see it as
inherently a religious issue.
Part and parcel, yes, with the atheism. So let's do the Satan Monument, which
sure.
is way
That's
more
definitely religious
oriented.
In nature.
We have a letter from James in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Uh-huh.
That's in Canada. Just a quick note about your conversation about the Satanic Group that said they would put their plans on hold until the city repaired or replaced the Ten Commandments monument. So you did hear the last show, right?
I did hear that.
The discussion of this, Russell?
Yep.
You guys went discuss the tolerance of the Satanic Group route, which I agree is a funny Schadenfreude way to look at it, but there is another way to look at it. One of the ways an oppressive majority can still marginalize fringe groups, even when they are legally prevented from doing so, is by goading or encouraging or allowing, with a wink and a nod, their extremist nutcases to do the opposing that they themselves would never do. For example, if there is a free speech zone where it just so happens that every non-Christian display is vandalized, then they can say, oh, well, too bad, with the resulting groups footing the replacement bill.
Uh-huh.
However, if the government is responsible for replacing, maintaining, and protecting the displays that have been approved for display, and they have a legal responsibility to represent all views, then they will have a financial incentive to prevent vandalism.
Right.
So, but this guy's arguing maybe that the motivation of the Satanist group to make a big show of we're not gonna put our they're not going to put their monument up until the Christian one that was damaged gets repaired, right? Maybe that they're making a big show of that for the sake of popularizing the understanding that the state has to do those repairs, because inevitably they expect their own monument to be vandalized once it goes up.
And the state will have to pay for the repairs.
He says this explicitly. James goes on. The Satanic Group may be making a strategic decision with an eye toward the future when their statue is up. I believe they expect it to be vandalized, and if they can get the government to cover the replacement costs of the Ten Commandments monument now, then they will be able to get it to cover the repair or replacement costs for all the future damage their Satanic statue will sustain.
God, I hope they're that forward thinking. That's awesome.
Interesting. I don't know, actually. We don't have the news story in front of us, and I don't know whether this whole assumption, the whole premise that the state will pay for the repairs is even a thing.
Right. I don't know if that is actually the case. But somebody's paying for the repairs.
Yeah. Also, it would not be unheard of for the government to repair the Christian monument now, and then rescind their responsibility for repairs.
Right, once
between that moment and the moment the Satanic monument goes up.
Right.
And honestly, I would be in favor of that, because I don't think the government should be repairing religious imageries.
Right, but if they are, they should be repairing all the religious imagery.
So it's an interesting angle and something we hadn't considered.
That's interesting.
Thank you,
like
James.
It.
Russell, do we have time for one more, do you think? In our remaining 3 minutes? Probably not.
Gee, I didn't have one queued up because I wasn't expecting it.
Well.
But then no.
Okay. Did we actually get started?
I had something about a Sikh.
Oh, yeah?
Okay.
A Sikh.
And ye shall find?
Sikh! And ye shall find. There was a Sikh student who is suing the army.
Hide and go seek.
Yes. Over a religious catch-22 in ROTC enlistment.
Thought it had something to do with his helmet.
A Sikh college student in New York has sued the U.S. Army, saying he can join the Reserve Officer Training Corps only if he shaves and cuts his hair, which is a violation of his religious beliefs.
Right.
Iknur Singh from the New York borough of Queens is a sophomore at Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. The group United Sikhs and the American Civil Liberties Union filed a federal lawsuit on his behalf Wednesday in Washington, D.C. Interesting. The fact that the ACLU is on this side makes me inclined to support it in a way that I wasn't at first.
Well, I am fundamentally against all these special exemptions for religious bullshit.
Yeah.
If there is a problem with the idea of the army imposing dress code things, then that is a problem on its own. And I don't see that the answer to the problem should be, if you have some kooky religion, then you should be exempt.
Yeah,
that's not the way it should work.
If
it's a bad rule,
right.
It's a bad rule and it should just go away.
Yeah, if
or
he
be
can be an officer without shaving, then there is no reason to have that rule in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. So as long as the ACLU is going after the rule itself and not trying to establish a special exemption for religion, then I'm in favor of it. But if they're after a special religious exemption, then I think it's bullshit.
Yeah. So ROTC recruiter said he would not be able to enlist unless he complied with all Army grooming and uniform rules, including immediately cutting his hair, shaving off his beard, and removing his turban. A new policy announced in January allows troops to seek waivers on a case-by-case basis for religious clothing, prayer time, or other religious practices. There are currently only a few Sikhs serving in the Army who have been granted waivers.
All right. Well, fascinating. Maybe we'll find out how that story progresses.
Okay.
Dennis, take us out.
All right. Well, we are being called to explore the Nexus itself as an interface between will and complexity. Thus, we'll reconverse with our hyper-Vedic multiverse in 2 weeks on the 3rd of December. We are at a crossroads of awareness and ego, and that unfolding demands I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma.
Sky.